This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online this morning, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 6 days from today, the first round of the NHL draft gets underway. By the time we're on air, next Saturday, the first round will have been completed. Friday night, the broadcast gets underway at 6 p.m. local time in Winnipeg. We'll be there in Philadelphia, bringing you pick-by-pick coverage of the first round of the NHL draft. Same thing Saturday, 9 a.m., rounds 2 through 7 of the NHL draft, live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We get you set for the NHL draft throughout the show today. Joining us on the program today from North American Central Scouting Service is going to be Mark Seidel. He's the scouting director of North American Central Scouting. Also joining us on the show today will be the head coach and the general manager of the Sioux Falls Stampede of the United States Hockey League. Kerry Eads is going to join us to talk about the draft-eligible prospects from the United States Hockey League. We'll talk to George Richards from the Miami Herald. The Panthers currently have the first overall pick in the upcoming NHL draft. We'll talk to George about that. They also have a coaching vacancy. We'll talk to George about that as well. And then John Forslund, the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play announcer, is going to join us, talk about the Hurricanes. They hired a new head coach, Bill Peters, earlier this week. I say good morning, first and foremost, to my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, 6 days from now, the NHL draft really get, you know, sort of into the a little bit of a silly season when it comes to the NHL world. Lots of talk, lots of innuendo, lots of speculation. But it's a lot of fun right now, this time of year as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like this is the peak. It's like the Stanley Cup Finals is just preview of the real, you know, impact time in the NHL. And I think what happens is people are very into the finals, but their team isn't in it. So they're in it to an extent. But now every fan base is all in on the draft and all in on possible trades, all in on possible free agent signings, and it happens to be all of those things open up or, you know, take place within about a week of each other. And that makes for exciting talk and exciting action.
Yeah, and all those teams, Richie, that really we haven't been talking about a lot over the last few weeks, including the teams that were in the first round of the playoffs. It seems like that was a year ago.
Yeah.
But especially the Winnipeg Jets, who we haven't spoke a lot about as of late. We will, of course, with the draft coming up and free agency coming up. But it's an exciting time because we have buyouts, we have coaching changes, and all basically a bunch of different puzzle pieces being put together right now. The rosters are going to be a lot different a couple of weeks from now, and you know it's exciting because as soon as you have another draft class coming in, even though the draft class might be a little bit weaker, that's fine. Even when a draft class is weaker, it seems that it always produces great NHLers and great late round steals. So I don't think I would read too much into that. It might not be as strong as last year's class or maybe even 2003, one of those great draft classes, but it's still exciting to know who the next generation of Jets is going to be, and it's going to be exciting to be there. I'm looking forward to it. I don't think any of us have been to Philly before, so.
Well, Richard has been.
Oh, Richie has. So Richie's been everywhere, though.
Yeah, he's a world traveler.
Yeah,
yeah. You and I, we're not allowed to cross the border without special dispensation.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'm just happy as he. I don't know. I'm just happy as he made it to the show on time, as he squeezed in literally seconds before we turned on air.
Well, it's funny. I knew you were going to bring this up. Throw me under the bus.
Well, of course.
First 3 minutes of the show. I believe
that's known as the throw under the bus segment.
Well, yeah. What I usually do is I told Richie last night that let's go together. And
we've had that talk literally for 5 years.
Yeah, and Richie's like,
over 5 years.
There's no way that's going
to
happen.
Every night before a show, he called me and said, do you want to pick me up tomorrow morning? I said, okay. What will happen at this point is I will call you, or you will call me before I even call you, and you will say, you know, I'm going to take my own car. Like, sound like this. Richie? Yeah, it is. I'm gonna take my own car. I'll meet you there.
It didn't even get to that point,
so
though.
Today he doesn't even call me at all, and I just didn't even contact him. And I came here, and as he shows up at 8:59 and 55 seconds.
Well, I use my iPhone to wake me up, like I imagine a lot of people do these days. And I made the mistake of hitting the snooze button, so I hit it for 7:30 in the morning, and then I hit it again, and then woke up at 8:30. So,
well,
Let's just say that I got 7-Eleven coffee today, not Tim Hortons coffee, because I couldn't wait in line because it was going to take too long.
Oh boy. Anyways, hopefully just we'll make it to the draft on time. Hopefully make sure you wake up for your flight on time next week. That's all we care about at this point in time. Ezzy, you mentioned when you were talking earlier, you mentioned that there's the buyout season and that's underway. So why don't we start with the buyouts that happened this week in the NHL? Start with the one that happened yesterday. No real surprise. Everyone expected it. Brad Richards is bought out by the New York Rangers. Just too much money left on his contract for a guy who's getting older. He still put up points. He still had over 50 points last year, and he still had 20 goals. But it's just getting, there was just simply, it was just an economics factor. They should never have signed him to that big money. And, so they bought him out, and he'll sign somewhere for a couple more years.
You know, Mike Johnson was talking about it on TSN with Rod Smith yesterday, saying that, the recapture was a huge thing, which it was. And he said, it wasn't necessarily performance. I think it was performance. At the end of the day, if Brad Richards is getting 75, 80 points, they don't care about recapture. They're worried about that later if they have to. And recapture meaning if he retires before the end of the contract, there's a significant penalty. And the recapture penalty, and we don't want to get too deep into it because it gets quite complicated, but the recapture penalty was instituted in the new CBA, and the contract that Brad Richards signed was before the CBA. The new CBA, so it was a kind of a backwards implementation of a rule, and that's what really frustrated guys like Mike Gillis with the Luongo contract and such.
Sort of a retroactive punishment for the teams that quasi circumvented the previous salary cap by having their last years drop off to a much lower actual amount of money.
That's right, but I mean, at the same time, they penalized Kovalchuk. It was very arbitrary, and I assume relationships in the back rooms had something to do with a lot of these things. But in any event, when they buy out Brad Richards, it's simply a matter of production. The cap will be an issue, but if the cap's at 90 mil, 100 mil in 3-4 years, they're not so worried about recapture. They're worried about, can Brad Richards, getting paid 6.6 average cap hit per year, can he perform at anywhere close to that value over the next few years? And I think they determined that he can't keep up with the pace of the National Hockey League anymore, first and foremost, and whether he's in good shape or not. And they realize Marty St. Louis is going to play forever, and if they keep him around for Marty St. Louis, like Richards and Carter is different. I know we're going to talk about Mike Richards, Drew, but Richards and Carter is different in their ages. Richards, they don't want to necessarily buy out for a number of factors, and we documented it last week. I didn't think he'd be bought out.
At the top of that list being the fact that they won the Stanley Cup.
Right. Chemistry, age, growing together, all those things. Different issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Richards and St. Louis have seen their better days. I mean, they're still productive players, St. Louis more so than Richards, but they don't worry about it as much long term. So they're making a decision here and saying, okay, it's not going to frustrate the, how our team is put together, because these guys both aren't going to play for the next 10 years. So at the end of the day, if you don't produce, they're not willing to take the risk. And that's just it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Rich. And he's making too much money. And as you spoke about, the production level and his age, the last couple of years, 2 years ago with John Tortorella and this past year with Alain Vigneault, the Rangers going to the Cup Final, Brad Richards is playing a reduced role. When Brad Richards was acquired, and we talked about this, the LA Kings 4 years back were the other team, I believe it was 4 years ago.
And Calgary.
5 years ago. And Calgary was in there too. I think we'd agree, though, that LA was probably had a better chance, right, of getting him.
Yeah.
The Kings were the other team that wanted him. So it's not like the Rangers, I know what you're saying, Drew. They did give him too much money, and in hindsight, especially too many years. But at the time, there was a bidding war for Brad Richards, guys, mm-hmm. and his game has fallen off. Big time. And he's still an NHLer. I believe that he's, I know.
For sure he is.
Today in Tampa Bay, yesterday.
He'll play second line and center for somebody.
I agree. And, they came out in Tampa Bay and Stevie Yzerman was saying, I don't think Brad Richards is going to come back to Tampa. Who knows about that? I think he will land with another team. Probably a team that isn't, if he's playing second line center, it's probably on a team that's on the cusp of the playoffs or a bottom level playoff team. But
we talked about Anaheim last week.
Yeah, he can still be productive. Exactly. And they said Saku Koivu's not coming back.
He's a third line center. That's a mistake people made. Koivu was with Winnick and Cogliano a lot of the time last year as a third line center.
Yep.
Their second line center was kind of Matthew Perreault.
Matthew Perreault
didn't have a bad year, but Richards is better than... I don't know, actually, if right now Richards is any better than Matthew Perreault. Oh,
but point being, though,
if they get their second-line center via trade, and then they can sign Brad Richards to be their third-line center or something, different players.
Well, that's true. If it's a Kessler, then, he can check, and then you can do that. Yeah.
I think we'd all agree that, Conn Smythe years are in the rearview mirror here, but Brad Richards is a serviceable second line center and an above average third line center. But as you said, there are going to be spots opening for him. But in the salary cap world, Ville Leino and David Booth, we saw those buyouts coming. We're surprised it wasn't last year. But with Brad Richards, there's too much term left. He's making too much money.
Right.
And for the Rangers, you know, we'll talk about Brian Boyle a little bit later when we do the UFA of the week. They don't have a fit for him in their top six. Brian Boyle's obviously in the bottom six. But the top six for the New York Rangers, there's just no room for him. And so it's unfortunate. I don't think that this is something where Brad Richards didn't do a great job, because he was pretty good in the playoffs.
Well, but who plays the centers ahead of him? Like, is it Brassard and Stepan? Because if that's the case, like, yeah, you're not going back to the finals.
Well, exactly. So, well, you lose Richards, you're losing a big piece of your depth. And that's why there were some rumors. Again, I know you guys wanted to get into this later, but would they move a Brassard to San Jose to get a Joe Thornton, for example, who apparently wants to go there?
The Joe Thornton saga is one that's been ongoing, and you have opinions on it, and we'll talk about that throughout the course of the show. A couple other players quickly that were bought out this week. Ville Leino bought out by the Sabres. We talked about it briefly last week.
Well, that's
week.
The worst contract since Chris Gratton's $10 million signing bonus, I think. Yeah, 15 years ago.
He had signed a six-year, $27 million contract with the Sabres a number of years back and had a grand total of 10 goals in 137 games in Buffalo. And David Booth, if he could play hockey as well as he hunts, he'd be very good for the Vancouver Canucks. Unfortunately, he's not, and he got bought out as well by the Canucks.
Both buyouts make sense. Right? Vancouver's totally starting over here. For a lot of reasons, you know, all the reasons we know, we've documented it on this show throughout the year, having Vancouver guests on almost bi-weekly.
Yeah.
Ville Leino's contract is, as you said, it made no sense from day one. But these are two players that can, they're going to be available. They're going to be making money on the side, so they might not have to sign for strictly monetary reasons. And I think they can both be valuable. I know some people say Leino's completely useless. I don't agree with that necessarily. I think you put Ville Leino on a second line, in a playmaking role of maybe a shooting center like a Derek Stepan.
Similar to what Leino was doing in Detroit.
Or yeah, even Philly. You know, if he really came on that playoff year, right? In the 2000 and, granted, that was a few years ago now, 2009-10 playoff year. But the point is, when paired with the right players, I think he can be productive because he can see the ice. You know, he's not going to be a speedster. He's not going to be your big goal scorer. He's never scored over 19 goals in the National Hockey League. Actually, 19 was his highest aside from 8. But he can make plays. So I think there's a place for him. Now, David Booth, he can still skate. He's a good stick handler. He's got a pretty deceiving wrist shot. He's not... The Mike Richards hit, the elbow, I think 2009 or 10 that was. It's on my birthday, I remember. He hasn't been the same in terms of his willingness to go to the net. And if you watch David Booth, and I watched him quite a bit in Florida prior to his move to Vancouver, he was a guy who would drive the net. And with speed and a pretty good stick handling, he would be able to create room for himself. Now he's not willing to do that as much anymore, and that's really inhibited his ability to... He's a scorer more than a passer, and it's inhibited his ability to score. And he's not the biggest guy, and when you're not willing, it gives you trouble. You play on the perimeter with his skills, got a good wrist shot, but still, you're not going to score on National Hockey League goalies very often if you're just going side to side, you know, playing that kind of horizontal game. So I think Booth has the potential to do something. Somebody will sign him on a cheaper contract, drop him to their third line wing, and see what they can get from him, probably in a one-year deal. But I think both of those players can be helpful pieces to different teams.
Both players said, by the way, that they do want to play in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So Leino, there might be the concern maybe that he'd go to Europe, but he does want to play in the NHL. The difference between, Richie touched on it a little bit there, the big difference between Leino and David Booth is that Booth has major injury concerns, and the Vancouver Canucks acquired him to play on the second line there, and he just wasn't scoring, and they tried it for years and years, well, a couple of years at least, after coming over from Florida, and he just wasn't producing. And when you look at, and you got to remember too, the compliance buyouts, this is the last year. So you can still, you know, just so you know, after the CBA, you know, without getting into the nuances of it, you can still buy out players, but there's way worse
salary cap
ramifications next year when you can't just basically wash your hands of a contract.
And Leno's 30 years old and David Booth's 29, guys. I mean, they got gas left in the tank.
And you know that if they're going to sign for a one-year contract, they want that to propel themselves into a multi-year contract afterwards.
You're both using each other.
Yeah, redemption. Take a player who needs some redemption, give him that opportunity, and if it works out, great. You get a guy for cheap for a year or maybe even longer. If it doesn't work out, you know what? It costs you money.
Let me ask you something, because we always do from the Jets' perspective here.
Yep.
I actually think they could use a playmaking guy like Alino. I don't know if he fits the bill necessarily, but a guy like David Booth, who's on the left wing, the Jets have had a massive hole. They have not had a third line left winger, unless you consider the Glass, the GST line, the third line in the first year.
Oh, that's going back.
Right.
It's going back a long time now.
But ideally, you want it to be your fourth line. But the point is, they haven't had a third line left winger since they started playing here.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be a cheap guy. And I think they need more playmakers, granted. But I'm just saying, somebody to consider. At a third line left wing, cheap contract, 1 year deal, nothing invested, really, aside from money.
Yeah, a cheap flyer might as well. And I'm not talking about a cheap Philadelphia flyer, but a flyer on a player like that, you know, it only costs you money.
It's the idea of it. It's not needing to just be that guy because there are other players,
right.
And we'll break it down, you know, getting closer after the draft and such. But that's the kind of thing. Even both of those guys, looking at the options you have, the cost benefit, and I think it's getting offense for cheap. It's the idea of Mason Raymond or the idea of Brad Boyes, although they signed to the extension of Florida. But the point is, you get an offense for cheap.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? So he leaves. So whatever.
You got it. There's another guy you can get for cheap the year after that.
You can't have James Wright. You can't have Tangrady. Those guys anywhere near the third line anymore.
You also don't have to give up a second round draft pick.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll discuss the coaching scuttlebutt from around the NHL. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. Gentlemen, there are still somehow, given that it's, what's today, June 21st, somehow there are still three head coaching vacancies in the NHL. Now, I don't have any evidence about this, and this is just anecdotal, but it seems to me that the head coaching vacancies in the league are taking longer to be filled this year than most years in past. Obviously, the vacancies I'm talking about, Vancouver, Pittsburgh, and Florida. Now, reports indicate that all three are close to being filled. But, or let me rephrase that. Not all three are close to being filled. Two of the three are close to being filled. Willie Desjardins expected to be hired in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald Gallant expected to be hired in Miami. Gerard Gallant expected to be hired in Florida.
I like that hire, by the way.
And then Pittsburgh, probably the most desirable of the situation, seems like they still can't get their head straight. I mean,
it sounds like Willie Desjardins burned them.
Well, he burned them because they wanted to offer him a two-year contract. If you're a head coach in demand, why would you accept a two-year contract? And, you know, yes, you know, so you got Pittsburgh calling you up, and Willie, we'd like to hire you to be the head coach, but we're only giving you 2 years, and you're not allowed to pick your own assistant coaches. Or you got Vancouver calling on the other phone, Willie, we want to give you 3 or 4 years, you know, 3 years is pretty standard, and, you know, you have free reign to run your bench as you see fit. I know that it's Malkin and Crosby on the left-hand side.
Fair enough, Drew. Fair enough. I mean, we know the Pittsburgh front office is a mess.
Well, let's start with that concept. Like, what are they doing there?
People enjoy power, and they abuse it.
Then they should hire themselves as head coach.
Well, they probably think they can do a better job than some of the guys out there. And the problem now is the lack of appeal of that position, because I don't think the people they interviewed for the management position, the general manager who eventually went to Jim Rutherford, I don't think all of their choices were as interested in them as they were in the candidates. I think some of the candidates said, you know what, I don't like what I see here. And you hope, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, they don't start dishing off talent, because, I don't know, it's a weird situation for sure. It's a situation where it doesn't seem like there's much of a plan. Jim Rutherford this week, he says all the, like, Jim Rutherford, he's won a cup, he's been in the league for 30, 40 years. I'm not questioning his hockey knowledge. But he says this week, you know, what we want to do is we want to have more players on the team that carry the puck over the blue line. So, like, are you just going to just keep saying catchphrases out there that are the cool catchphrases, and people, because people write basically every article on the internet aside from like three are the same. And, like, that's all the catchphrase. You want to, you know, puck possession, take the puck over the blue line. Well,
Well, hell, Jim, what else did you want to do? Did you want to put together a team of 18 players that dump the puck in from the red line? Like, just the comments that he's making, it's as if he's trying to appease somebody. It doesn't seem, it seems like not, it doesn't seem authentic. Something smells there, and it smells pretty bad as far as I'm concerned, and you wonder what they do with the draft. You know, he's indicated that he wants to draft a forward, which is, obviously they need forwards, they have a lot of defensemen in the system.
Yep.
But it's odd that you declare that before the draft, or at least allude to it. Nothing about that situation seems like it's going what we probably believe to be the right way. And they are, as we said on the show before, they are wasting the prime years of two of the best players in the world. And if they look back, they already should look back and say, what the heck were we doing in certain fronts? Although Ray Shearer, I thought, did a pretty solid job. Going forward, is there a plan? Or is there a plan? They don't have a coach. How can you not secure a coach to coach that much talent? Like, coaches are salivating to get in there.
They should be. On paper, they should be.
That's what I mean. On paper, they should be. And you can't get them to a deal with Willie Desjardins. No offense to Willie Desjardins, but nobody talked about him a year and a half ago.
Right. And Willie Desjardins, for those who don't know, just was the head coach of the Calder Cup winning Texas Stars. Yeah. Used to be an associate coach with the Dallas Stars.
World Junior coach.
Former guy who won in the WHL. But Richie, just listening to you talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins situation and how they still haven't really fixed their head coaching vacancy. And we know Dan Bylsma was sitting there like a lame duck after Ray Shearer was fired and then Jim Rutherford came in. But you look
classless.
Classless
too.
You look at this team and everybody knows the big names on this team. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. They've got a pretty good defense. What are you going to do with Marc-Andre Fleury? But there's still lots of talent there. And to me, there's something else going on with the, I guess, maybe the organizational structure or, as you said, the vision of this team, because this team by no means is in a situation where the window's closing. 3 or 4 years from now, if they're still here, they're struggling to get out of the second round of the playoffs, then you're talking about, do you have to break up this Crosby-Malkin 1-2 down the middle dynamic? Because I think everybody would agree that it would be ludicrous at this point to do that because of the fact that who are you going to get that's better than either one of those guys?
You can't do that.
I mean, with the exception of maybe Ryan Getzlaff or Jonathan Toews or a collection of maybe 5 or 6 players, you've still got the best 1-2 punch down the middle, you know, with the exception of a few teams. But we're talking talent-wise, and still, even that group of defensemen, even though it needs to get better, you've still got Letang there, and I thought Paul Martin still got a lot of years left, and Niskanen came on really strong there. Richie mentioned they've got a lot of prospects in the system. Derek Pouliot, who was drafted last year, is a highly ranked prospect. Just because, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury might not be an elite goalie, and that might be a question mark, there's something else going on there. Willie Desjardins, the fact that they basically said, this is your job, and he would have rather take Vancouver?
Well, but they didn't.
Like, you're taking Vancouver?
But they put
so many conditions on it that why would you take that job? Why would you take a job for 2 years?
I understand his point in saying that, like, Crosby and Malkin for 2 years.
Well, you're going to a rebuild. Vancouver's not making the playoffs in this foreseeable future. I mean, right. I think we'd all agree on that. Vancouver's a mess. Kessler is probably out of there.
Oh, he's out, yeah.
So, I mean, you've got a Vancouver team, didn't make the playoffs last year. And whether or not they want to use that ugly word rebuild in Vancouver, Desjardins is picking that team over the Pittsburgh Penguins, a team that with a couple of right moves, you get a player in there, one or two players in there, a depth defenseman, shore up the goaltending, Pittsburgh Penguins can be a Stanley Cup contender again. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins ran into Henrik Lundqvist in these past playoffs. I didn't think the New York Rangers outplayed the Penguins.
Yeah, but they had so many flaws. They were not playing well. They had no depth on their third, fourth lines. Their defense was overrated. Their goaltending wasn't terrible in the playoffs, but wasn't anything to inspire confidence. Wasn't certainly inspiring any confidence in anybody. You look at even their wing spots in their top two. I mean, it was a flawed team with core talent. Flawed conference. I mean, look who made the finals.
Top-heavy team.
Yeah.
It's a very top-heavy team, and that's Jim Rutherford's number one issue heading into. I don't even think it's the goaltending, to be honest with you. A lot of people say Marc-Andre Fleury's not good enough. I don't even think it's that. I think he's got to shore up the depth on the forward lines, improve the decor that he has.
But you know what? Let me say this. If Rutherford's only there for 2 to 3 years, which people suspect he is, maybe that contract makes more sense. But if you want to just be the classy organization, offer him the 4-year deal or the 3-year deal. I'd say the 3-year deal.
Yeah, that's
fine. And then that third year, you pay him if he's gone. I don't see the need for coaches to get 4-year deals. Personally, it's because they just seem to get fired every 5 days. But the 3-year deal, 2 years insulting. I think 4 years is too long. 3 years seems like reasonable grounds. If you are doing well a year and a half into your contract, you're going to get re-upped.
it just bizarre situations continues in Pittsburgh, and we'll see how it unfolds over the next week or two as they head into the NHL draft in Philadelphia
next
week.
We might see Alfie as the head coach there.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by George Richards of the Miami Herald. We'll talk about the Florida Panthers coaching situation. They have the number one pick next Friday in Philly at the NHL draft. We'll talk about that. Lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel in studio alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Miami Herald. He covers the Florida Panthers, George Richards. George, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. A lot of news coming out of South Florida with the Florida Panthers, given the NHL draft upcoming next week. Of course, there's talk about Brian Campbell. Let's start with the head coaching situation there in Florida. A lot of rumors that Gerard Gallant is going to be named the new Panthers head coach early next week. Can you give our listeners an update on what's happening with the Panthers coaching search?
I'm hearing that as well. I know they're close, but I've also heard that there was an earlier offer to Dan Bylsma. So, this could be a negotiating ploy. I don't know, but I know Dan wants to work next year, and now it looks like Vancouver's got a coach. So Florida's really the only option for him to work next year. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. But it looks like Monday at 11 o'clock they're going to have an announcement. So hopefully we get it before the for them, but at least we know it will be done come Monday.
George, how much is money a factor in this decision?
Well, money is always a factor. I mean, the Panthers have said they're going to spend money on payroll. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't really talked to Dale about, how much they're going to pay their coach. But you got to think it's always a factor. I mean, Dan was making, reports are $2.3 million with Pittsburgh. So he's going to want, something close to that. I mean, he knew he was going to take a pay cut coming, to Florida or wherever he went, probably. But how much, I don't know. So, we'll have to wait and see, what happens, and then we'll ask.
You mentioned the 2.3. I've heard the number as well. I'm not sure what Dale Tallon makes, but are there any coaches that you know of in the league who make more than their general manager?
Yeah, see, that's another thing. I mean, there's a whole power foothold, thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that has something to do with it too. But not really. No,
George, just switching to the draft. It's less than a week away. The Florida Panthers hold that number one pick, as of course you know. Dale Tallon came out weeks ago and said that they would be willing to trade that number one overall pick. I guess, what's the latest? Is he still, in your opinion, or what you've heard, is he still shopping that pick? And if he is shopping that pick, what would he be looking for specifically? Would it be a draft pick and a player, a prospect, a veteran? What would he be looking for in return if he is going to trade that number one overall pick?
Yeah, I think he's looking to stay in round and get a veteran player, and something of that ilk. But it's got to be a good deal for him to do this. I mean, it's obviously in a good spot. Nobody's in front of you. There's a good players there they're going to be able to choose from. So a team's going to have to make a nice deal to get Dale to make the trade. He's not just going to make the trade just to do it. So, but he's definitely looking to get immediate help. The Panthers finished 29th in the NHL last year, and a little bit of pressure then to start turning things around. So he's looking to get some immediate help. But also, looking ahead, he wants to stay in the first round. And, I think there'll be some interest now. Will there be that kind of interest? I don't know. I don't know what the market's going to be next week when we're in Philadelphia. the general managers do crazy things at the draft. You know, they fall in love with players and they fall in love with, you know, picks and stuff like that. So, I just think, you know, the Panthers won't be picking first.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is George Richards of the Miami Herald. He covers the Florida Panthers for that newspaper.
And George, you mentioned you don't think they're going to be picking first, but if it happens to be that they can't find a trade that they like, and you look at the top three candidates for that number one spot, Sam Reinhart, Sam Bennett, and Aaron Ekblad, when you look at the Panthers, you know, they have up the middle Barkov and Bjugstad, if they want to say those guys are going to be 1-2, and they have Gudbrandsson, and it's kind of, you know, somewhat similar players to who's available. If they stay at that pick, who do you see them taking?
Well, you know, the Sams are both, you know, both good forwards, you know, but I think you've got to go with Aaron Ekblad, only because, you know, last year the Panthers had an opportunity to pick Seth Jones at number two and bypassed him. I just don't think you can do that 2 years in a row when you've got, you know, another good defenseman coming up in Ekblad. You know, the Panthers, you know, feel that they've got some good young defensemen coming up, but, you know, you can always use more, and he's a right-handed shot.
Right.
You know, they really like this kid. And that's why Dale's in a good position. He doesn't have to make this move because he's, you know, you're either going to make the deal and get, you know, a couple nice pieces and, you know, another prospect, or you keep it and you add something to your organization. So I think they go at Vlad, you know, just because, I mean, you know, he's the best player available.
George, Brian Campbell on the back end there in Florida, he's got $7.1 million left on his contract for the next 2 years. Earlier in the week, we heard that he had asked for a trade out of Florida. Then that was denied, saying, no, he's happy there. You know, what's the truth regarding Brian Campbell and his situation in Florida?
I really don't know because I haven't been able to get a hold of him, but to say he's happy wouldn't go that far. You know, the last couple of years have been rough on Brian. Last year was the first time in a decade that he didn't make the playoffs. And you know, to have a back-to-back seasons like that, it's tough. I mean, the guy's a competitor. He wants to win. It was hard on him to watch. So, I went through that. I talked to Dale. Dale said he didn't ask for a trade. But does that mean he's happy? No. I think Dale likes that. Yeah, I think Dale likes that kind of fire from guys. He doesn't want people to be happy. He doesn't want people to be complacent. But he also wants, you know, Brian Campbell to be part of the solution.
George, another defenseman who kind of fell out of favor with, I guess, the coaching staff, if you will, last year was Kulikov. What's the latest on him? Any future with him and the Florida Panthers, or is he destined to go to another team?
Phil realizes, you know, he's 25 years old. He's had four coaches, you know, and then he's still. He's a good young defenseman. I think he had his moments last year where he really struggled. I think he was very turnover prone. But as he went on, he was one of Florida's best defensemen. And I think to a decent
George Richards covers the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. George, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
No worries, man. Be good.
Take care, George. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the coaching situations in the NHL, the Carolina Hurricanes, hiring a new head coach in Bill Peters. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I think with Billy Peters, they were looking at his experience with the Memorial Cup. They're looking at his experience in the American Hockey League, and they were looking at his experience working with Mike Babcock and in the Chicago Blackhawks organization when they were a Stanley Cup winner back in 2010. So there were a lot of things they were looking at, and I think the biggest thing is, again, the pedigree of Billy Peters. He's got a lot more coaching experience than Alfie does.
Pierre McGuire discussing the Carolina Hurricanes' hiring of Bill Peters as their new head coach. Bill Peters, formerly an assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings. So the Mike Babcock coaching tree adds another branch in the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. So, gentlemen, I'll be honest, I don't know much about Bill Peters. I don't even think I really knew much about his name prior to him being introduced on Friday as the Hurricanes' new head coach. General manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, Ron Francis, made the announcement. Your thoughts on Bill Peters being hired to be the head man in Carolina?
Well, you know, people have different opinions on hiring head coaches based on who they coach with, meaning, you know, Paul McLean being, you know, having a lot of coaching experience in the minors, and then coaching beside Mike Babcock and then getting his own position. You know, like people coaching with Mike Babcock, for example. And does that make them a better coach? Or is Babcock just such a good coach that it kind of overshadows really the actual talent level or ability of that coach beside him? I think in this case, it's similar to McLean in the sense that Bill Peters goes to Spokane, coaches there, is able to have success. Then he goes to Rockford, coaches in the AHL for Chicago, as Pierre McGuire alluded to it coming into the segment, you know, another successful organization, has success. And then, well, he goes to Detroit and he coaches with Mike Babcock, who I consider to be the best coach in the National Hockey League. And the team, I think, overachieves at some points, you know, at many points you could say based on the injuries transition that they're in right now. And he learns from the best and is able to coach. Now, he's mainly, I believe, responsible for defense and penalty kill. But they certainly had a Patrick defense at times there, right? Because the Lidstrom moved on and they had to make changes and all these things. He seems to have the experience at both minor, junior hockey, working with young players, minor leagues, working with guys who are working their way up, both young and older, and NHL. And I think that kind of experience, and I thought Mike Babcock's comment, and John Forslund is going to be joining us next segment.
Top of the hour.
He tweeted this out, and the quote was, Mike Babcock on Bill Peters, it's not he could be a great coach. He will be a great coach. He knows hockey. He makes players better, and he does things right. So if you have an advocate like that, you know, clearly, now granted, a guy who coaches with somebody else is generally going to be supportive of him. But when Mike Babcock says something, I think it carries a lot of weight. And I think this is a very good hire. And I think he goes into a situation where you might question the big time, you know, they're paying their guys, as Jordan Staal probably overpaid. Alex Semin probably overpaid. You can even argue Eric Staal probably overpaid. Cam Ward probably overpaid. Jeff Skinner, if he doesn't play a lot, might be overpaid. Having said that, there's no pressure. The media attention is limited. And those guys all have skill. Probably some of them will be moved out. Probably Cam Ward, at least. But there's skill. And he'll have time to... And that's we talked about kind of Willie Desjardins vis-a-vis Pittsburgh. There's time to develop. They're going to give him... They're not going to put too much pressure on him. If he shows development with young players and if he gets the team buying in, you know, quote unquote, he'll be able to have some success. And I think with Ron Francis, the guy who seems to be I don't know how he was going to be a general manager, but he was a patient player.
Sure.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree with you, Richie. I like the hire, too, because of what you touched on there is the situation. The Carolina Hurricanes, it was clear that last year, they're quite a ways away from being a playoff team, even in the weaker Eastern Conference. So he's going into a situation, and Richie mentioned that he was formerly an assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings for 3 years, working with the younger defenseman they have there, Danny DeKeyser being one of those guys that developed under his watch.
Kindle.
And you look at who he's going to deal with in Carolina. You're talking about Justin Falk, who they just signed to a contract. Mm-hmm. Ryan Murphy, they've got a lot of young defensemen there.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a situation where because he's a rookie head coach, that's fine. Even though sometimes I know you want to have a veteran head coach in the NHL to deal with younger players. But this is a team that has a long way to go, and they're going to have to build more through the draft. They don't have a lot of top prospects coming up through the system, especially at forward. So they're in rebuilding mode. And the Carolina Hurricanes have done that before, where they've kind of rebuild on the fly. But I think it's a good hire. If you brought in a Dan Bylsma, I don't know if that would be the right situation for a team that doesn't really have a good chance at making the playoffs in the short-term future. And I think John Forslund would agree with that. This team needs to draft and develop better than they have. And I think they have a lot of good pieces. Richie mentioned there, you know, the Staal brothers up the middle. And they need some help there on forward, especially in their top six. And, you know, similar to Willie Desjardins, he came up through the WHL, coached the AHL, had success at all of these levels, was an assistant coach in the NHL, and now he's kind of paid his dues. And that's kind of, unless you're a former NHL player kind of thing, and you are an assistant coach for a few years, so you're talking to Dan Bylsma, you're talking to Ulf Samuelsson, that's kind of the fast track to being a head coach in the NHL. Whereas Desjardins and Bill Peters, just because these guys are neophyte NHL head coaches, they have been coaches in many leagues, and so they're not quote unquote rookie coaches. I mean, these guys have coached at many different levels in many different situations. So I think Ron Francis is perfectly happy knowing that Bill Peters is going to be your head coach. And I think, by the way, Ron Francis has to make some hard decisions with what he's doing with this team, because I think you look at the team, and we saw that a couple years ago when the Jets were beating up on the Hurricanes regularly. I mean, this team, I think, is a long ways away from being anywhere close to a contender.
And Ron Francis has to be able to, I think as he's right on all those points, he has to be able to be more patient than his predecessor was in Jim Rutherford. And Jim Rutherford showed patience to some extent during the course of his tenure there, and it was a long tenure. But he also was active, I think, sometimes tearing it down maybe earlier than people thought he should have, but it helped him. But what I'm speaking about is similar to what happened here with Atlanta. The complaint about Atlanta that you hear all the time and the crutch and all that stuff is, you know, rushing Elias Lindholm. Maybe not rushing Jeff Skinner because of his success, but who else did they rush? Rushing Ryan Murphy, I think. A guy like Ryan Murphy who can move the puck, can skate, can shoot, great on the power play, needs to refine his defensive game. Why they kept throwing him up in the NHL or even trying to force that seemed like an odd decision to me. This was a guy who clearly needed to be tutored at a junior level and an AHL level in terms of how to play defense. And what was the rush? The rush was they didn't have enough NHL defensemen, and his talent level brought him to the league, and that's not the way to do it. You're better, and I realize they had injuries and such, but they rushed guys because I think they were trying to prove that their picks were good enough really quickly. Even Elias Lindholm. I remember watching a game last year with John Forslund, Tripp Tracy doing the game, and Lindholm talking about them referring to Lindholm, you know, not being necessarily comfortable or growing into himself a bit. Should that have happened so quickly? Probably not. And then you burn the entry level deal. There's contract ramifications, so the organization needs to take a step back. And I think Bill Peters also has his experience in the Detroit system of
patience.
You're not coming up until you're 4 years in, you know, 3 or 4 years in the AHL. I think that's going to help the organization as well.
Yeah, well, it's certainly time for, I mean, they've pressed the reset button there in Carolina, obviously, with Ron Francis moving into GM, Jim
Absolutely.
Rutherford
Absolutely.
Moving out. And this coach is, I mean, the hiring of Bill Peters here is just another sort of another layer of them pressing the reset button to get things back in order to how they want to develop and run their franchise for the foreseeable future.
You know, another thing is, Drew, is lots of times, and sometimes it's a comfort level, you know, you see John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos and baseball, you know, a friendly relationship and the trust allows you to bring a manager in. But here, people thought it was going to be Ron Francis and former teammate Ulf Samuelsson.
Sure.
And I like that Ron Francis deemed Bill Peters, I'm not sure if they have a history, I don't believe that they do to any large extent. I like that he said, okay, this is the best coach for this team, regardless of personal relationships. And I think this guy is going to be somebody who takes us far, takes us for a long tenure, I'm assuming. And has great success with us, as opposed to Samuelsson, where maybe I know him better, and I think he's a good coach, but I'm not sure of his credentials, because Samuelsson doesn't have the same coaching credentials as Peters does in terms of all the levels. I mean, mm-hmm. Samuelsson's coached in the NHL. He coached with Gretzky. He coached, obviously, with Vigneault, so he has experience, and he might get hired in Pittsburgh. But the point is, he didn't lean on friendly relationships. He leaned on what he thought was the best coach.
And you don't think Ronnie Francis is looking over at Stevie Yzerman in Tampa Bay with the success they've had with John Cooper? Sure. Mm-hmm. Guy Boucher yes. won head coach of the year, and then it didn't work out. But John Cooper, guys, I think you're looking at the coach of the year there. Especially with Steven Stamkos going down and all those young players that came up through Norfolk.
Patrick Waugh.
Patrick Waugh, too. But yeah. just on the analogy between what's
for
going
sure.
on in Carolina, Tampa Bay was a young team, too. Sure, they had some veterans, but for the most part, it was a young team, and John Cooper's done a great job. So there's a new wave of coaches, guys, coming in the NHL here. There's also, you know, the veterans, and that's why Florida was interviewing Ron Wilson and
right.
Mark Crawford and... But there's always going to be a new wave. There's guys that have been working at the AHL level and at the assistant coach level mm-hmm. in the NHL, and these guys are smart, and they deserve the chances they're being given as head coaches in the NHL.
I want to circle back then. You talk about guys getting their chances. Gerard Gallant, we expect, was probably going to get hired in Florida. That's what George Richards was sort of speculating as well. He had a very brief head coaching opportunity in Columbus. I think he was an interim coach there, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong on that as to the actual status. status. Your thoughts on him probably getting the job in Florida?
I think it's a really good hire, and I think fans have learned more about Gerard Gallant based on the TSN series CH24.
Sure, he's been in Montreal as an assistant.
Absolutely, and he's
a pretty good hockey player back in his day too.
He was, for the Detroit Red Wings, yep. And a guy who coached in Columbus, and a guy who, same idea, Drew. What did he do? He went to the QMJHL. Mm-hmm. I believe he won a Memorial Cup there, and went back, and he was a head coach. So what he did was assistant coach in Columbus, became head coach, as Drew mentioned, for a very short period of time, went to become a head coach in the Q, succeeded, came to Montreal, where assistant coach in Montreal is almost like the same pressure as head coach in some of the southern markets.
I think the equipment manager is under a lot of pressure in Montreal.
He seemed to handle it with flying colors, with somebody that Michel Therrien leaned on. You could see that in the show on a weekly basis. Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, can't overlook the fact that he also coached Panthers winger Jonathan Huberdeau in the Q.
Yeah, right. And very well respected, and I think well liked, and played a rugged game, as he mentioned, but also coached in Montreal and other places where they were, Montreal especially, where they tried to push flow and skill. So I think it's a good mix. I think he's a mix of tough and fair. I think it's a really good hire. I like, especially with a young team, Bjugstad, Barkov, Gudbrandsson. You mentioned Kulikov. Who knows if all those guys are going to be there or not. Huberdeau. Tons of young
talent. Luongo's now between the pipes for a full year.
And that'll help the young guys. But tons of young talent there. And how do you bring along the young talent? You don't hire Ron Wilson.
Plus the first overall pick that they very well may use. On... Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Richie. My English is a little bad at 10 in the morning. But, they could get an Ekblad or a Sam Bennett or move the pick and get another player. So Florida is a situation. They've had a lot of rough years there. Shout out to our boy, Steve Warrior. And things are looking on the up and up there. Things are looking very good in Florida. And with the solid ownership there, it's nice to see. Because even though, we've had to pick on certain teams, we haven't picked on Florida. Phoenix, I'm talking about more so. But it's good to see solid ownership and teams trending in the right direction. You don't ever want to see a team that's constantly at the bottom and struggling and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And I think Richie mentioned all these great players they have in Florida, and there's light at the end of the tunnel. This is going to be a pretty good team in a couple years.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play man John Forsland is going to join us, talk more about the Hurricanes' hire of Bill Peters and everything else doing with that team's offseason. And you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show John Forsland, the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play announcer for Fox Sports Carolina, also does work for NBC. John, good morning and thanks for doing this.
Hi, good morning, guys. My pleasure. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine.
That's good. Glad to hear it. John, obviously the Hurricanes made a big splash yesterday, hiring Bill Peters as their new head coach. First of all, your thoughts on the hire, and were you surprised that it ended up being Bill Peters over a guy that we'd heard bandied about a little bit more often, like Alf Samuelson?
Yeah, I think the connection between Alf and Ronnie, which people, I think, were accurate in terms of speculation. I think Samuelson was at the head of the list and certainly was part of the interview process right down to the end. I think, that was a natural that you could look at because of the way they basically grew up together as active players, have remained close friends over the years, and Alf has kind of laid out a nice little background in terms of being in a position to become a head coach. But this process for Ron Francis was lengthy, lasted almost, a couple of months, and interviewed anywhere between 12 and probably 18 different candidates before settling in on a guy like Bill Peters. Now, Peters was off the radar only, I think, in terms of public perception. Among the four teams that have vacancies, I think we've heard his name linked to just about every position that was open. And certainly right down to the end, it looked like that the Pittsburgh Penguins were making a real push, for Bill Peters, which ironically is Jim Rutherford doing that from the Pittsburgh side. So Bill made his decision. Ron landed the guy that he wanted, the number one guy out of the chute, which is good for him. It's really hard to look at these situations and say it's a great fit, it's this, it's that, because everybody, no matter who the new coach is for all of these teams that get their new guy, they're all going to say the same thing. The coaches are all going to say the same thing. But I think for the Hurricanes and for Ron Francis being new to the job, it was important for him to become his own man, go outside the group, which he did, get a guy with a very good background. The only thing he hasn't done is been a head coach at the National Hockey League level, but get the guy that he wanted instead of, you know, trying to convince someone to come to Carolina, miss out on a guy, go to option two, option three, so on, or go to a guy that just has that complete familiarity like a Samuelson, and then people could start, you know, shooting holes through that if they wanted to. So this is interesting. I think, you know, he made a nice impression yesterday in Raleigh, but, you know, the only thing that matters is when the boys come back to camp and what his training camp looks like and then what the team looks like when we start over again. And that's for every team. So, but I think in terms of making the right choice for a hire as a new general manager, Ron Francis did a good job.
John, Bill Peters has been the assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings the last 3 years, and he was just hired yesterday. So I imagine he's still in the preliminary stages of evaluating his team. But in the short time since he's been hired, I guess talking to him or talking to the club, is there any indication based on what they have currently in Carolina, what kind of style of play he wants to incorporate, or is that still too early to really make any type of assessment or comment like that?
Well, it's a good question, and it's probably a little bit early for that. The only reason I say that is because I think the Hurricanes have to make some decisions on what they want to do with some of their key players. Do you want to stay with the leadership core as it is? Do you want to make a move or two, you know, surrounding the draft, ahead of the draft, during the draft, or shortly thereafter before free agency? You know, once that's put into place and the kind of the plan is laid out in terms of the personnel he has, it might be a little easier to assess, you know, where they're going. I think we can all read into what he has done throughout his career, the Memorial Cup in Spokane, the success he had with Chicago in the American Hockey League, some of the players he developed for the Blackhawks, and then, of course, being part of the Mike Babcock coaching tree, which can't hurt anybody. And we've seen Todd McClellan and Paul McClain and what they've been able to do coming out of Detroit. You hope it's the same thing for Bill Peters. The hockey people that I talked to after he was announced, everybody had great things to say about him. So I think they're going to get a guy that the number one thing he's going to have to do is adjust the style of play for the Hurricanes in terms of getting their attention. I think Kirk Muller, and I said this throughout the end of the year prior to him being let go and afterwards, I thought Kirk Muller did a really good job with the Hurricanes identifying some issues. Some of their issues are the consistency of their lead group, of their top players, how hard they play on a game-to-game basis. That's going to be the chore for Bill Peters, number one, to get to that group. But you know what, boys? We don't know what the group is until Ron Francis makes his initial moves. There's a lot of trade speculation with the Hurricanes involving some big names. If it is true, factual, that those players are moved, then that's going to change. If not, Ron's going to have to stand behind some of those guys and reinforce the fact that they do have a big part of what the Hurricanes are going to do in the future. Then it's up to Peters to jump in, address it during the offseason, get their attention in training camp, and then from game one, you know, as they always say with the Red Wings, start on time. You know, that's going to be the key.
John, you know, you've been around Ron Francis for a long time, player and management, and now a general manager, and obviously Jim Rutherford as well. How do the two differ?
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, Ron was respectful of the office all the way up. Once he retired, you know, as a player, he was outside the organization. Ironically, not a lot of people know this, and we just passed the anniversary of their Stanley Cup on June 19, 2006. Mm-hmm. Ron Francis was a fan that night. He had no link to the organization at that time, came with some friends, watched the game, and he and his wife actually sat in a suite for like an hour after the game ended, watched the celebration, just kind of had some moments to themselves, which is, you know, he's the most identifiable player for this franchise, Hartford and Carolina, and here he is. He had no role in that. But shortly thereafter, he would join the organization, come in as a coach. And I think that's part of the thing that I enjoyed watching, you know, with him develop as a front office type, is the fact that he spent some time with Paul Maurice in back of the bench, learned from Paul a great deal, watched what went on there. I think it's important for all these all these retired players, especially the great players that, you know, want to get involved in the game and give back, which I think is tremendous. But if they can get some behind the bench experience, it's going to go a long ways, because now they see it from the other side, see how it operates, see how the room operates day to day. Then he can take that information and take it to the front office, which he did. He was very respectful of Jim over the years in terms of knowing his place, doing what he was told. He'd been in player development, did some scouting, then went into, you know, assistant general managing and so on. But the big key now that the break has been made, with Jim Rutherford still being part of the organization as president, it might have been a situation where Ron might have deferred a little bit, at least early, in terms of some of his decisions. This is baptism by fire now for him, which I think is a good thing. Jim took the opportunity with the Penguins. Off he went. Now Ron's his own man. And if he can be his own man, articulate a plan, execute it, and then be given the resources through ownership and time, that's the type of job he has with the Hurricanes, in my opinion. I don't think it's an easy fix. I don't think it's a short, you know, tweak here, tweak there, automatically their playoff team and away they go. They have some work to do with scouting and development and so on, and that's a big key in today's game, as you guys know, you know, with salary cap. So he's got enormity to his job. He's going to need some time to do it, but, I mean, unbelievable person, smart. The playing resume speaks for itself, but just a guy that's always had some level of humility. So he's going to understand, I think, the whole framework of an organization from top to bottom, from the equipment guys, the players, best players, support players, and so on. All those things are important. I think he's got that package he can deliver with that.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Our guest is John Forslund. He's the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play announcer for Fox Sports Carolina. John, you mentioned that, you know, he's going to have to make some tough decisions. You look at the Hurricanes goaltending situation. You got Cam Ward there, you know, $6.3 million per season over the next 2 years. They re-signed Anton Khudobin. He's got 2 years left at $2.25 million. Justin Peters is an unrestricted free agent. How do you see the Carolina Hurricanes handling that goaltending situation? And, you know, is there a for sale sign on Cam Ward right now?
I think there is. It's unfortunate, you know, for me, because, you know, in my career, I've been privileged to be around him since he was 18. Watch him develop as a first-round pick. Watch the quick success he had in 05-06, win the Conn Smythe, you know, all of that. Develop into a guy that's in the elite conversation with goaltenders. Then watch him over the years play behind a team that gave up way too many scoring chances, didn't have the success, played a heck of a lot because they didn't have a lot of depth at that position, broke down because of injury, lost a little bit of his confidence, I think, along the way. And the last season was really a train wreck for him. Could never get off the mark. Every time it looked like he was recapturing himself, you know, it went off the tracks because of injury or inconsistent play. So everything seems to be positioned that Cam Ward will be on the market or is on the market. I think everybody knows that. There's been a lot of reports out there. He does have the no-trade clause. I'm not familiar with the exact verbiage of what type of no-trade it is. If he has to submit a list of teams, however that works, you know, that's player to player. We don't always have that stuff. But certainly it appears that he would like a fresh start from his end, I would think. And I think the team wants that too. But I think the team, in my opinion, needs to be careful. Anton Khudobin came in and did a great job. Was injured early after a spectacular training camp, early start, missed 12 weeks of the season, came back and earned himself a brand new contract and kind of established himself as a number one. But you're going to a guy, if they do, that still has a lot to prove that way. Still cutting his teeth as a real number one goalie in the National Hockey League. Maybe he is. But unless you have depth, unless you have a real fallback plan for number two, unless you have someone in the organization coming up, and you mentioned Justin Peters, he's probably going to test the market, I would believe. And if that were the case, you have Cam Ward. Now, you mentioned the 6'3 figure. You know, in hard dollars, it's 6'7, 6'7. Cap hit at 6'3. And you're going to have to ask another team to take all of that on through a trade. And then they're going to have to take a leap of faith and say that Cam Ward is the old Cam Ward of a few seasons ago. I'm not sure that's a definite among some of the teams. So I don't think they're going to buy him out. I think they'll try and trade him. But I don't think it's a bad thing for me if the Hurricanes end up keeping Cam Ward. I think he'll have to fight for the net for the first time in his career since he was a rookie. That's a good thing for him. Khudobin might have a leg up going into camp. So what? I think the game and the league now is about two goalies. I think you have to have a real good two. It's a substantial amount of games these number twos play. I think the days of number ones playing 65, 70 games, the 82 are gone. I think it's in the 50s, and then the other guy's got to, pick up the rest of the share and do what he can and play some big games for you. I think you saw that with the Jets last year. I think Montoya played some games and delivered some performances that nobody was expecting, and that has to be the case. So, you look at it that way, and maybe the situation will call for Cam Ward to stay put because there just isn't a lot of interest or the trade that makes sense. And I don't think it hurts the Hurricanes at all. And it wouldn't surprise me, knowing him, if in that situation as an underdog, his talent comes back and his fight comes back and he becomes even a better goalie. I wouldn't close the door on a 30-year-old guy with that kind of resume that, for me, most of it is between the ears.
John, in one of your previous answers, you mentioned drafting and developing, which is perfect because a lot of this show is going to be previewing the NHL draft, especially coming up later on in the show. The Carolina Hurricanes have the 7th overall pick. I know it's kind of hard to say because I imagine if the deal is right, they might move up. But do you think there's maybe a little bit more of an appetite for Ron Francis to try to move up in this year's draft?
I think he'll try. I think there's enough just some of the knowledge we have on the outside of this draft is that, it seems like some of the teams won't have a problem doing that. There seems to be, a level of player that can be, you can change back and forth depending on your opinion on who's 4, who's 7, who's 3, and so on. So maybe there's a chance for him to do that. I think it's important, for the Hurricanes that they be careful with that. They've been able to draft okay over the years, especially with their top players, but it's deep in the draft where they've been hurt over time. And there aren't a lot of second, third, fourth round, fifth round picks that are even in the system, And the minor league team didn't make the playoffs, and you look at all of that, and I think they're going to have to take a long look at where they're at and make sure that you're trying to improve the season that is coming next, but not at the expense of your future. They're not a team that can afford to lose out on draft choices like that. And when you go through the misery of having a season like that and you end up at number 7, if they're lucky enough like they were in 2010 to get not only Jeff Skinner at number 7, but they got Justin Falk early in the second round, that's pretty good, your first two picks. You don't want to lose that. Last season they had the 5th overall pick. They took Elias Lindholm, slowly got into a position where he made a significant contribution down the stretch. That gets into the drafting and the development, mm-hmm. and that's where the Hurricanes have had some issues over the years, guys, because they've rushed players. And, you rush guys, you're rushing players because you're not strong at the top level. And that's where, you got to be a little bit more conservative, I think, with a lot of these guys. The good teams, the great teams who are able to stay at a level, your Detroits and your Chicagos and so on, they have the ability now to draft pretty well, but also let the players do what they need to do, play in the minors and get the development under their belt so that they're ready when they come. Getting players in a position too soon is dangerous. The Hurricanes have a situation going on a little bit with Ryan Murphy in that regard. Mm-hmm. So, to answer your question, I think he'll entertain it. It might be part of a bigger package. It might be part of a situation that involves a Cam Ward or even maybe an Eric Staal. I mean, his name's been thrown around too. So, Ron's going to look at this and understand that he might have some flexibility to make a big splash at the draft through a trade. And, he basically says what a lot of these GMs have been saying about they leave the door open for all kinds of different scenarios. So we're not going to really know until we hit next weekend anyway.
Now, final question for you, John. And on that point, I think you raised a lot of good points. And you look at the Hurricanes roster right now, and it's a little bit thin on the back end, even up front. Mm-hmm. How do you, there's a little bit of a disconnect in terms of the team probably doesn't want to spend a ton of money knowing they're not going to make the playoffs, but they have to fill these spots and they don't want to rush the young players. How do you deal with that?
I think what they need to do this season, the first step is getting the new coach. But I think the most important thing for the Hurricanes, in my opinion, is that they have to get back to a place where they establish team identity, what kind of team they are, so that they go out in the ensuing years and draft that kind of player. We're looking for guys who fit into the Hurricane mold. I think they're missing some of that. And then they got to get into an off season after this year of having most of their questions answered. You look at where they're at right now, it's question mark after question mark. Mm-hmm. First one was who's going to be the coach. Then there was kind of a sorting out in the front office between Jim Rutherford and Ron, and then Jim left, and now it's Ron. Okay, fine. And then you're going to get to some of these questions about their leadership core. Eric Staal, Cam Ward. It might go beyond that. It might get to Alex Semin and Jordan Staal. You never know. But you have to go into your season knowing, well, here's our group. Here's the role that they filled. Here's how they played for the coach. Now you make a couple of changes along the way and you let your players mature. I think, you know, in the Eastern Conference, they're not in the tougher of the two. Mm-hmm. The West, as you guys know, is really tough. The East, I think you can make a couple changes and at least be in the conversation for the playoffs. I would consider them that type of team and that type of organization. But they have to look at a bigger picture here and understand that they do have, you know, Skinner, Falk, Lindholm, even Murphy with his development. You know, they've got some players here. Even Jordan Stahl's only 25. So you go 25 and younger, they have some pretty good talent, you know, of that generation of player. And they're going to be able to add to it with another prime draft choice this year. Well, take your time with it. Sort it out. Let the coach kind of play with it a little bit and kind of put together type of team he wants and then go from there. That's how I see them in the big picture. I think, again, they played and they competed from a financial standpoint last season almost near the cap. And for the Raleigh market, that's totally unrealistic. So some of that's going to have to get trimmed, and that's already been talked about. So I don't know where their team budget's going to be, but they're certainly not going to be spending a lot. If anything, they're going to have to shed some salary. Mm-hmm.
John Forslund covers the Carolina Hurricanes for Fox Sports Carolina. He's their play-by-play voice. John, thanks very much for this terrific insight into the Hurricanes.
Okay, guys, anytime. You guys have a great summer. Enjoy the draft.
Thanks, John. Take care of yourself.
You too, John. Thanks a lot.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to John Forslund, play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, for joining us. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on illegalcurve.com. Coming up next segment, we're going to be joined by Mark Seidel, the scouting director for the North American Central Scouting Service, to talk about the upcoming NHL draft. Reminder, next Friday, we're on air starting at 6 p.m. with first round coverage of the draft live from Philadelphia. We'll be joined by Hustler and Lawless, of course, and then Saturday, same time, 9 a.m., set the continuation of the draft with rounds 2 through 7 here on TSN 1290.
There's going to be the draft, obviously, the Jets picking a 9, but there's going to be a ton of trades, I assume.
It seems like everybody is sort of antsy, and I mean, you know, in the NHL, there's just, and I know that there's, you know, talk, and this is the silly season, like I mentioned. This year, it seems like there's more tangible conversations and actual players that are being talked about that say, I want out,
right,
trade
yes,
me,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like,
plus, I mean, you kind of get away from all the insider stuff because it's happening literally on the floor.
That's right. It's yeah, breaking as you speak. There's no you know, time to sort of leak it to your colleagues and
right,
try and get a little bit of leverage and everything like that. It's going to happen. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen right there, right then, and just sort of unfold before your very eyes. Talk briefly before we bring in Mark Seidel at 10:30 about the Vancouver Canucks situation. You got Ryan Kessler. Obviously, he wants out. He's made it perfectly mm-hmm, clear he wants out. Mm-hmm. You know, do you see that situation sort of getting itself settled between now and the draft next Friday?
Well, I think yes. I do see getting settled before July 1.
Right. So it might even happen at the draft, on the draft floor, like it did last year with Schneider getting traded to New Jersey.
Very possibly different management, of course. Drew, you got Jim Benning in there, and it appears that Willie Desjardins is going to be the coach, and he's taking that job. But, you know, as you mentioned, you guys mentioned Pittsburgh. You're thinking long term there, right? Even with the Sedins. So Kessler going out, rumors this week that Anaheim's willing to offer more than they were before. If I'm Vancouver, I don't worry about trading to Anaheim. I don't worry about in the division stuff. You take the best trade possible.
You're not competing against Anna. Anaheim is so far better than you are that if you think that you're in the same ballpark as they are right now, you're fooling yourself.
And when you end up hopefully being better, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, Kessler will be, like, the way he plays will not be as effective in 3 to 4 years. So I think you make the best deal possible wherever that may be. And everybody kind of waits to see, you know, what does Spezza go for, or what does Kessler go for, or what does Thornton go for? And these will all be factors, and we'll talk about Thornton later. But I think Vancouver, they will trade Kessler, I think, for sure, because when you're Jim Benning and you're Willie Desjardins, probably more, probably both of them, you're trying to create a new atmosphere. There's a lot of negativity last year, a lot of controversy. The last thing you need to bring into the locker room this year is an unhappy player.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw them with buying out Booth. Not saying Booth is unhappy, but the idea is you're trying to change the culture. And Kessler will be, I think, be traded, and I assume it'll happen probably before free agency. But if they don't get a trade that they like, they might wait to see who loses out on Stastny and those guys in free agency and try to go to that. But I think what you do there, Drew, is you may add a team or two that you maybe didn't think was in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
But you may also lose a bunch of teams if they do add Spezza and the other guys. So I think you want to make the trade when you have a bunch of teams interested at the draft, and you have the draft pick flexibility of trading for a top 5, 10 pick, 15 pick, whatever it is.
Well, along those same lines, it seems like the team that hosts the draft always wants to make a big splash, a bigger splash than just selecting in the first round.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Flyers have had a long, last year with New Jersey getting Schneider, the Flyers have had a long association with Ryan Kessler. They offered him an offer sheet, I don't know, it seems like 40 years ago now.
It was 2009?
But, yeah, whatever year it was, they offered him an offer sheet. You know, they're, to me, sort of a little bit of a dark horse there as a team that might be able to put something together if Vancouver is insistent on not wanting him to be in division or in conference. You could ship him off to Philadelphia, and Philly gets to make their splash in front of their home fans, and they get to feel that a second-line center role that, you know, they don't really have that second-line center right now. Doesn't seem like Couturier is going to develop into that guy.
No, Couturier is your third-line center. Braden Schenn has been playing some second-line center. He might be a few years away, but also, Richie, they've had Braden Schenn on the wing.
Yeah.
But the guy, Vinny LeCavalier, who Richie just mentioned, is the player. After signing the 4-year deal, after 1 year, they're looking to move him because, similar to kind of Brad Richards guys, you can't have a guy of Vincent LeCavalier's quality. And it's decreased a little bit. I didn't think he was that bad at points last year, but you can't have him playing on your fourth line. So that it's interesting. We know that they liked Kessler 5 years ago, so why wouldn't they still like him? So it was 5 years ago. So
and LeCavalier was a 5-year deal.
Sorry, it was a 5-year deal, not 4-year deal.
Four years left.
Yeah.
That's why Richie's always making me look good. You don't make me look good, Drew. You make me look bad. Richie makes me look good. So, there might not be a Corey Schneider trade happening in Philly, because I think Philly, what do they have, the 17th overall pick?
Yeah.
They have a mid-round pick. So, there might not be something that splashy. And I remember that was exciting when that trade happened. Because
does Braden Shannon, the 17, maybe something else to get the deal done?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have to consider it. Yeah, or, you know, maybe
Braden Shen's a Western boy, so maybe Vancouver wants to bring him out there. I mean, Ryan Kessler, I think, guys, even with the injury problems, and Richie's documented this a lot on this program, the style of play that he plays might shorten his career a couple of years, but I still think he's got a lot of good hockey left. You remember what he did in 2011 in that Vancouver Canucks run against the Bruins in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Sure.
I still think there's a lot of teams. Richie mentioned the Ducks, Flyers. There's going to be a few teams that want Kessler.
If Paul Holmgren was the general manager in Philly, I'd say this is a foregone conclusion that it would happen.
Yeah.
Now that it's Ron Hextall, he seems a little less impulsive than Mr. Holmgren was during his tenure.
Which you wouldn't have said during his playing days.
That's right. Coaching, a big difference there. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, Mark Seidel is going to join us. He's the director of scouting for North American Central Scouting. We talk the NHL draft coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.